Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis.
Welcome back, America. My name is Cicely Davis. I am forever your Savage Truth host. Great to have you join me. Hey, listeners and viewers, seriously, I really truly want to thank you for leaving the positive comments on the platforms. I try to make it in there to comment back to you. I do view them, and when I'm not running around and doing this and doing that, I try to get in and comment back to you because I like the exchange and to let you know, hey, I see you. I know you're there, and thanks for chiming in. That's really, truly important to me, and it's nice to have people who think like you and lend support and validate your thoughts. I'm not looking to be right, of course. This is an opinion podcast with a whole lot of savage truth, but in between the truth, I'm looking to see, you know, if I am the only one who sees this or sees that. Am I the only one with this perspective? And that's where the sweet spot is, because when I go into these comments, I see that, no, I'm not the only one. Others are seeing this and thinking this or having the same perspective on a particular issue or policy, on a particular law or an event as I. And in that confirms, at least for me, that common sense and sanity is still alive, and therefore hope is still alive and kicking. And that's my goal, is to edutain, if you will. For those who are new, welcome. For all of you, please, as always, please like, share, subscribe, and just as I discussed and encourage, please leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube as we get into it. Was going to be a shorter show today, but there's a lot to cover here. As I always say every week, right? We just got to put the savage truth down on these events, even during a somewhat lower drama week. But this has turned out to be high drama as usual. Power. You know, power is a great thing in righteous hands, and it's massively destructive in the wrong ones. America, through the founding fathers and so hard fought, was uniquely established in the founding, the power of the people system of government, which is where we get the term democracy. Democracy, meaning rule of the people, is a system of government in which the citizens exercise power directly or elect representatives from among themselves to form a governing body, such as a parliament. Democracy is sometimes referred to as rule of the majority. So, what was the original purpose of the U.S. government? Well, thank you for asking. The purpose of the U.S. government is expressed in the preamble of the Constitution. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, number one. Ensure domestic tranquility, number two. Provide for the common defense, number three. Promote the general welfare, number four. And that's not food stamps and EBT cards, by the way. And secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our prosperity, number five. Do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Beautiful words. That, of course, being so beautifully written and stated in the preamble of our Constitution. Now, you're probably saying, but Cicely, you said that we are a constitutional republic. Now you seem to be saying we're a democracy. Well, my smart and clever listeners, you are right. And both can be mutually correct. Allow me to explain, because all jokes aside, this is important. Not just to the relativity to this whole thing with Ketanji Brown Jackson deal with the First Amendment, which we are going to cover. That's where we're headed, by the way. But in general, as citizens, Americans need to know this. It's important that we know this. So we are a democracy, as I said, meaning rule of the people, a system of government in which the citizens exercise power directly or elect representatives from among themselves to form a governing body. We are a constitutional republic, based on the Latin phrase res publica, meaning public affair, is a state in which political power rests with the republic through their representatives, in contrast to a monarchy. So, by definition, a republic is a representative form of government that is ruled according to a charter or a constitution, And a democracy is a government that is ruled according to the will of the majority. You see, the Constitution establishes a federal democratic republic form of government. That is, we have an indivisible union of 50 sovereign states. It is a democracy because people govern themselves. It is representative because people choose elected officials by free and secret ballot. So, mutually correct, meaning if we regard ourselves as a constitutional republic, then democracy, rule of the people, which will be honored, it will reign through elected representatives as per and deemed by our Constitution. Since democracy, in its very definition, means rule according to the will of the majority. Mutually correct, but a constitutional republic first in order to have a working and true democracy. It's a beautiful thing, a unique thing that we have here in the United States of America. And then, of course, we have the amendments. And it seems Ketanji Brown Jackson seems to be having trouble with the very first one. You know, the First Amendment that says Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or the press or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. The abridging of freedom of speech, in particular, she seems to be struggling with as a sitting member of the highest lawful court of the land, the Supreme Court. So it seems that I need to help her out, just like I needed to do so when she couldn't define what a woman was. So Ms. Jackson seems to be all concerned and worried about the First Amendment, that it may be hamstringing the government. So on Monday, as per reporting by NPR, which is what my source is, in a major case testing the role of the First Amendment in the internet age, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments on the federal government's ability to combat what seems as false, misleading, or dangerous information online. Now, as I said, I'm going to weigh in on this, flex my constitutional knowledge, tell the savage truth about this, and share or shame the Supreme Court judge while doing so. Because as I said in my last episode, folks, smoke and mirrors. There's the headline, and then there's what's really going on, especially when you talk about the Democratic Party. So as always, let me just give you a quick background about this. I did some digging for you. I did some research for you in case you were busy or missed it, or you need a reminder of the basis of these shenanigans. Again, my source is the NPR. So last September, the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, the most conservative federal appeals court in the U.S., issued a broad ruling that barred key government officials from contacts with social media companies. Among the personnel targeted in the order were officials at the White House, the Center for Disease Control Prevention, the Office of the Surgeon General, the FBI, and an important cybersecurity agency. Now, the appeals court said that individuals at those agencies likely violated the First Amendment by seeking to coerce social media platforms into moderating or changing their content about COVID-19, foreign interference in elections, and even Hunter Biden's laptop. All the things we said, things we were screaming about, and we were called racist, we were called conspiracy theorists, we were called far-right nationalists, you know, always far-right whatever, right? Like, we can't just actually want to exist under the amendments of the Constitution or just want a lawful society existing under those amendments, exercising our rights under democracy. You know, we're always far-right. You're only considered a moderate right person when you agree with the Democrats. Right? Not that I want to be considered a moderate right-leaning person. Absolutely not. But again, when you maintain your right lean but agree with blue lawlessness and or corruption, you're considered a moderate, right? Like Liz Cheney. They consider her a moderate Republican because of her stance against Trump. When you maintain your right lean but agree with blue lawlessness and or corruption, you're considered a moderate, right? For example, Liz Cheney is considered a moderate Republican by leftists. But when you actually apply and or agree with the law and expect to exercise the amendments of our ruling document called the U.S. Constitution, you're a far-right demon from hell. Anyhow, where was I? Oh, yeah. So the appeals court. The appeals court said that individuals at those agencies likely violated the First Amendment by seeking to coerce social media platforms into moderating or changing their content about COVID-19, foreign interference in elections, and even Hunter Biden's laptop. The Supreme Court has put that ruling on hold while it examines the tricky issue in the case. Now, the plaintiffs in this case, the lawsuit, are two states, Missouri and Louisiana, and five individuals, including vaccine opponents, who either were banned from some internet platforms at the height of COVID-19 pandemic, or whose posts, they say, were not prominently featured on Facebook, YouTube, and X, formerly known as Twitter. Now, prominently featured basically meaning they were blocked or canceled, or their algorithms were suppressed, of course, preventing them from having the reach and the impact or being shared across those platforms. Now, here's the kicker, folks. The Biden administration notes that under established First Amendment precedent, the government itself is entitled to express its views and to try to persuade others. As the government says in its brief, and I quote, "A central dimension of presidential power is the use of the office's bully pulpit to seek to persuade Americans and American companies to act in ways that would advance the public interest," end of quote. The administration's opponents counter that the bully pulpit is not a pulpit to bully, and I agree. Now, let's back up and break this down a bit so that we can fully understand what the Biden administration is really seeking, what they're really upset about, and for me to help Ketanji out as well, because she needs some help here. So again, smoke and mirrors, right? The Biden administration knows that they're losing to Donald Trump. They're counting on two things. Number one, for Donald Trump to be tied up in legal proceedings so much so that the American people would lose faith in him and go towards Biden and be unable and unavailable to run and appear on the campaign trail. Of course, the mugshot, the embrace of the Lake and Riley's family, and his overall resilience and willingness to continue, to not quit, to not give up, take hits, take shots, and be gossiped and joked about and lied upon, attacks on his character, attacks on his personality, his reputation, his businesses, has only made him even more popular and even more embraced. He has since gained more percentage of the Black vote, more percentage of the Hispanic vote, and the independent vote altogether. Practically all of the middle class, to which the Democrats realize the middle class demographic is no longer a voting bloc they can depend on. Because of Donald Trump, the Republican Party is finally recognized as the party for the middle class and the working class. So the Biden administration was counting on Biden to be able to hide in the basement, avoiding debates because of Trump's legal challenges. And number two, being able to influence and lean on big tech and social media giants to continue to be a left-wing extension of their agenda, blocking, censoring, canceling, deplatforming conservatives from messaging truth with regard to Biden's failures, his ineptitudes, exposing their lies about crime, the economy, immigration, education, health, and foreign policy. They were counting on that. Now, no one is saying that the Biden administration can't attempt to persuade the American people of their own position. In fact, we expect that. This is what competition is for. This is competition for the American people's confidence and vote between Joe Biden and the presumptive Donald Trump. I say presumptive to be technical because the convention has not occurred, although we all know that Donald Trump will land the nomination. But it's a competition nonetheless. So we expect to see ads, one against the other, speaking to why to choose one over the other, speaking to the accomplishments and the capabilities of one in contrast to the failures and incapabilities one versus another. We fully expect that. We expect to see Democrat leaders and influencers argue and support one versus the other on the platforms, in interviews, on their social media platforms. We expect to see that. And as individuals, as an administration, they have every right to do so. So if they want to put out ads, opinion pieces as to why they are the better choice, even pieces about the dangers of misinformation, they can do so. Even though they lie and mislead on a consistent, deliberate basis, they can do that. No one is saying they can't. I have yet to hear anyone say they can't. Now, we, of course, are free to disagree, dismiss it, or ignore it altogether, entirely, as I do. But the Biden administration isn't satisfied with this because that's not what this is about. It's not about Biden's ability or right to persuade. If that were the case, it wouldn't be a case at the Supreme Court. No one is saying that the Biden administration can't make statements about what they think is misleading or what is information. To say we think this or think that is misleading, this or that is misinformation. Again, smoke and mirrors, right? This is about the Biden administration's wish to use social media platforms as censorship proxies to shut down the speech that they don't like, to ban, to censor, to deplatform the purveyors of what they claim is misinformation. This is to control and define, according to their platforms, what is misinformation. Their way of persuading the public is by only sharing their side of the story, much of the time, as I and so many others have pointed out, being flat out lies. The border. The border is closed. That was a lie. The laptop was a Russian disinformation conspiracy by this sore Trump administration. That was a lie. Kamala Harris was in the White House on January 6th. That was a lie. We now know she was at the DNC. Trump said or implied that there would be a bloodbath if he's not elected in November. That was a lie. If you're vaccinated, you won't continue to carry the COVID-19 virus. That was a lie. Joe Biden didn't willingly steal and conceal classified documents for decades or disclose those contents to his ghostwriter. Lie. And on and on and on. That's the persuasion tactic they wish to use, which is a First Amendment violation altogether. Information conveyed as an administration to persuade people for votes is one thing. Deplatforming, censoring, and/or canceling individuals or entities is altogether another. A violation of the First Amendment to which the government should have no business dealing in. All of the content online is information. And the government has no business, according to the First Amendment, in an attempt to censor it, which is at the heart of the issue. Now, much of that information, billions upon billions of bits of information, is perhaps useless or wrong or right, flirts with reality or non-reality, but it's continuous and it's ample, it's endless, but it's information nonetheless. This is indeed the age we live in. Many, many people lacking the ability to discern what is real and actual and what is fake and useless. But it is there, and we can't decide to allow the government to be the deciding filter as to what is good, what is bad or useless or useful, what pieces we can hear or see and which ones we cannot. Regardless of the massive realm, we are in the information age, an age driven and dominated undoubtedly by information. Giving the government the deciding power to filter information renders the government absolute power to control over our lives and our minds. And I don't know anyone who is interested in that. I mean, this administration specifically, who pulls fire alarms to stop or interrupt truth, who believes that men can get pregnant and believes in cutting the healthy breasts from young, healthy girls and the testes from young, healthy boys actually helps, is actually good for them, actually saves their lives. This says to me that they are unqualified to control the flow of information. But no one is qualified to control information. Not you, not me, certainly not the Biden administration. And that's the point. But, and unfortunately, not all the justices seem to understand or agree with this notion. One from the Constitution itself, to which they are posted to uphold. Ketanji Brown Jackson has some very fundamental confusion about the Constitution, the government, and their exact roles in American society. She can't define what a woman is, and now she ultimately reveals individually she doesn't understand the Constitution. Now, 2 weeks ago, she was part of the 9-0 decision to rule Colorado unlawful to take Trump off the ballot. So I thought there was some hope, but that has proved to be sporadic and inconsistent in light of this issue. So let me quote her. Let me quote Ketanji Brown Jackson here. And she says this, and I quote, "So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. What would you have the government to do? I've heard you say a couple of times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe. Don't do this. Don't do that. It's not going to get it done." And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country. And you seem to be suggesting that the duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that, because you got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying the government can't interact with the source of those problems. End of quote. So she says she's worried that the First Amendment hamstrings the government. Savage truth. Yes. If followed, as it should be, the Constitution, it will. It should. It absolutely does, as set up by the founders. That's literally the point, the purpose of the First Amendment, quite literally the whole point of the First Amendment. This is where I help her out, okay? She needs my help. She asked for the Missouri Council's help, but I will step in to do so, to help them both out. So I'm helping Ketanji. Just so you know, Ms. Jackson, the government doesn't have First Amendment rights. The First Amendment right goes to the people, and it says the government can't tell you what you can and cannot say. Now, let me say, as an American citizen and as a savage truth teller, it's my pleasure to help you with this, Ms. Jackson. Thank you for asking for help. Please allow me to do so. Now, you're clearly saying you don't have a clue what you're doing here. See, we have a Bill of Rights, unlike any other country in the world. Our country was built like no other, and our Bill of Rights came from a founding era, where they had been living under a tyrant. That means they knew and understood tyranny firsthand, making them very, very skittish with government and what they could do. When governments speak, that's one thing. Again, the Biden administration can speak all they want as to what they believe to be misinformation all day long. But when governments coerce people and businesses, they then have an awful lot of power, and that can turn into tyranny very quickly. Our documents, the Bill of Rights, Ms. Jackson, apply to its citizens, not the government, and therefore cannot do anything to violate these rights. But if the government can decide to exercise censorship or decide what it considers relevant or harmful or worthy of disclosure, good, bad, right, wrong, etc., then we are not free. Ms. Jackson, this isn't hard. It should be simple and easy for you as a Supreme Court justice. If there is anyone who decides who or what is useful, harmful, or good information, and I don't think anyone is, it's certainly not this administration. And you, Ms. Jackson, don't surprise me with being one to worry about this issue, because that you yourself cannot define what a woman is. So leave it up to the people to decide. The founders, once again, got it right. Moving on. Let's deal quickly with this bloodbath comment. Okay, let's just get in and out of this. This is a game that the media plays in which Donald Trump receives more popularity, increases his appeal and fundraising, and the media can't seem to figure this out or stop it. And it has been going on since 2015. So Donald Trump says something using inflammatory language in a non-inflammatory context. The media cuts out the inflammatory language from the context and then blow it up to be something worse than it is or needs to be. Now, the media is in pure fright and panic about the 2024 election, as according to many polls. Real Clear Politics poll shows that Trump is up 2 points on the national average. And he's leading in every battleground state with Joe Biden, who is in deep trouble. And so they're looking for anything they can to rile up the Democratic base to shed a black, glooming light on Donald Trump. They're looking for something that says Donald Trump is a clear threat and danger to the Republic. He's going to overthrow the Republic. There's going to be blood in the streets. No one, of course, actually believing that that will actually happen. Blood in the streets or killings or violence or murderous mayhem. But there's going to be civil war, as they like to imply, because becoming more like Haiti, vigilantes in the streets, chaos and trepidation, unbridled violence if he doesn't win the election. Now, we use provocative language a lot to drive a point home or to stress emphasis. But the media on the left continue with the narrative nonetheless. Never mind the countless number of times the left media used the term bloodbath in the past. Here are a few examples. Don Lemon, reporters on the Jen Psaki show, The Morning Joe, Van Jones, as quoted saying, the Republican Party is going to be destroyed. It's going to be a bloodbath. Joy Reid saying, it's going to be a bloodbath at the ballot box. I can give you many, many more examples of this. No one thought in hearing them that it meant blood would be flowing in the streets and the gutters with massive slaughter. We understood it to be language, terminology to incite the seriousness or impact of the situation. But for some reason, when Trump uses the same terminology, it literally means bloodshed for the American people. Now, the truth is, the term bloodbath is used in politics a lot, meaning a slaughter, an overwhelming decisive result or outcome that leaves no question as to the results. That's all. It's evocative, but certainly doesn't actually mean someone is going to be killed. Caroline Leavitt, Trump's spokesperson, said, and I quote, obviously Trump was talking about an economic bloodbath. Economic bloodbath. Biden's policies will create an economic bloodbath for the auto industry and auto workers, end of quote. But they took the two sentences where Donald Trump said, if I'm not elected, there will be a bloodbath. They took it out of context and then said that what he meant was that if he is not elected, there will be a full-scale insurrectionist civil war in the streets all across America. Please, I implore you, go watch the full clip with the full comments. But essentially, Trump was in Dayton, Ohio, when he was disparaging electric vehicles and made campaign promises to maintain the auto industry should be reelected. The 2024 candidate blasted China for its part in building car factories in Mexico. And I quote him, we're going to put 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars if I get elected. Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That will be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories. Again, clearly talking about the economics of the auto industry, and they knew it. Headlines, folks, smokes and mirrors. Here's a heading out of New York Times. Trump says some migrants are not people and predicts a bloodbath if he loses. We're winning. And I hesitate to say that because I don't want complacency to set in, but they are worried. What used to work isn't working anymore. Doesn't work. The black community is waking up, the Hispanic community, the working class, and even the youth waking up and speaking up about what is actually happening and not allowing themselves to be manipulated and lied to. I think we can all agree basically that the rule of law is under attack in this country. There is no semblance of accountability or justice. Hunter Biden chickens out. He doesn't show up for the public hearing he was so demanded to be a part of. And how do you measure or assess truth in a court of law? It comes down to who has the most to lose and who has the most to gain. We hear the term motive very often. In this whole Hunter Biden inquiry, we have foreign actors who wish to gain access to the United States and to the United States government. Now, if someone has lied in the past, it is sensible, it's reasonable to disregard all of their testimony. So the man who insisted on testifying in public for fear that his answers might be misconstrued or taken out of context or misinterpreted and actually pulls a stunt outside of Congress and doesn't show up, only to later show up unannounced within an entourage to fake appearances to testify, which we later found out was part of a documentary to help his image. Yeah, and I'm sure that's going to be really unbiased and truthful. Pulls yet another stunt and doesn't show up for another public testimony. So now we have all the Bidens, in addition to being corrupt crooks, are cowards. Let's talk about Bob Alinsky. Let's do that. He is a military man from a military family who put their lives on the line to protect U.S. and its citizens. Then you have the Bidens, who have lied incessantly about the international fund and have done nothing but profit from foreign countries into small corporations. We know the Bidens are liars because they use Anthony Blinken, who was a Democrat operative, to line up 51 intel agents to tell us that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation, which only corroborates the international scheme that they were operating. Here's the bottom line. Hunter Biden was a foreign agent while his father was vice president. Joe Biden knew it and allowed Hunter to be a foreign agent without registering as one, and even flew him and his partners abroad. They took the money from foreign countries, then lied and said they didn't include China, and the Biden family was the conduit. Everything from the laptop to the photographs to the WhatsApp. I have a question, in fact, I have a series of questions. As we spend more and more time pretending to wonder or guessing who the big guy is, we all know, everyone knows who the big guy is. Why is this a bone of contention at this point? But I get it. The Dems have to contest everything. They have to create doubt and to try to cloud this whole sham. So right now, their answer is there's no evidence. So apparently, it's okay to bribe a politician's family, their son, their grandchildren, their son, their brother, and then say, oh, Joe Biden didn't do anything in exchange for these things. Oh, okay. He didn't grease regulations, drop sanctions. He only just flew his son to these places, these countries, to cut deals. What didn't he do? He had them at the White House, at the observatory. He took phone calls. He took meetings with them. And then they say, well, you can't name any crime. And Bob Alinsky rattles off a slew of crimes. RICO, foreign corrupt practices, bribery, the Friar violations. And then they say, oh, there's nothing suspicious going on. Well, then why is Joe Biden, why does he have an alias? Why does he have a burner phone? Why are their donors paying his back taxes? Why are millions of dollars in cash missing, unaccounted for? We still don't have the offshore bank accounts. We still don't have the credit card statements, and we're just getting started. And then they say, oh, well, we don't see any of that money going to Joe Biden. Actually, in deposition, under oath, Hunter Biden was asked specifically, how many times did you pay your father's household expenses? Over 100? Hunter says, oh, I don't know. I don't know. Over 100 times, and he can't recall paying his dad's business expenses, his household expenses. And then there's the check for 40 grand, which went from China to Joe Biden to Joe's bank account. Joe Biden said it was a loan, but the accountant who testified under oath testified that there's no evidence that it was a loan. And then they say, well, you don't have any proof. Then they start reading off the text messages. We need Joe Biden to help us get across the finish line with the China deal. The Chinese are doing this deal to be in business with my family. Don't mention the big guy being involved because he's paranoid. Pay me the money. My dad's sitting right here next to me. We're selling the Biden brand. And then hold 10 for the big guy. So you can't say there's no evidence when the mountain of evidence is caving in on you. It's obvious the Chinese were bribing the Biden family through Hunter, who was selling access to his dad for cash, diamonds, and cars. This is corruption. It's evident, it's obvious, it's irrefutable, and everyone knows it. Listen, folks, truth must prevail. Whether they like it or not, Biden must debate. He must answer questions about Hunter's dealings and his own cognition. He must answer to the American people about the erosion of our economy, our borders, and the American way of life. His corruption, and under his leadership, his administration's ineptitude to lead this country. Savage truth is, Joe Biden was never the adult in the room. Savage truth is, he was never the moderate Democrat with the elderly man approach with respect of global leaders. He was never, ever going to bring the people together. Joe Biden simply doesn't have what it takes to go another 4 years. Final savage truth is, he never did. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, as always, be bold, be strong, be faithful, be true. Until next time, I'm Cicely.
The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.